Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life after booze. For this episode, we get to welcome our second ever special guest to the pod, and we are so freaking excited. Today, we are joined by a licensed professional counselor who is also over 500 days booze-free and who I'm fangirling over because his TikToks have literally saved my ass over quarantine, Jeff Gunther, aka Therapy Jeff.
Hello. Welcome. Happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I've been sober for 450 days.
I'm Kaylee, and I've been sober for 523 days. How many days have you been sober, Jeff?
Yeah, something over 550 days. So I don't know the exact number. Probably more like 560-ish is where I'm at.
I love that you have both Katie and I beat.
I know. That's huge. This is your podcast.
Yeah,
so
by the way.
Yeah, he's taking over. He's taking over the rights.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I will say, just continuing our off-screen conversation.
Yes.
About LaCroix. So I was talking, I like had some friends over, and we all were drinking some, well, I call them LaCroix because it's LaCroix.
Yes. LaCroix. As one does. Uh-huh.
You get it, Katie, you're French.
I do. Le mieux. Mm-hmm.
And one of my very like all-time favorite flavors is limoncello.
Yes.
Have you had limoncello?
Oh, yes.
And mm-hmm. My friends had not had limoncello, and I was like excited to give it to them, and I was like, you gotta drink this because it's like it's creamy, like there's a creamy mm-hmm. somehow they make you feel like it's creamy. And my friend, she was like looking at it and she's like, yeah, and they'll never tell you how they make it creamy because they keep all of their like ingredients secret, and their secret chemicals that they're putting in there, they're not fucking telling anybody about it. And there was this like whole conspiracy. And so when you were saying, Katie, that like, you know, they have this innocent bullshit on the bottom.
I hate that.
Actually, they're like very secretive about their like secret sauce, and they're not telling anybody how they're making that limoncello taste really creamy.
Interesting.
So I don't know. Do what you want with that.
Well, you know, I'm going to take this one step further, because when I posted this Instagram story, it said, which is better? Coconut LaCroix, or limoncello.
Oh, interesting.
And then after that, I said, I don't really care at all because I'm super pissed that it says innocent on this zero calorie, zero sodium. And then that's when they wrote me back. So had I known that they were being fuckers about the ingredients, I would have outed them for that too.
Mm-hmm. Wait, they like PR mm-hmm. representative of LaCroix reached out to you and...
Yes. And they were like, we will send this. I could see this as problematic. Like, I totally understand where you're coming from.
They were scared.
They validated my feelings and my 1,200 followers. And then they did nothing about it.
Yeah, because it wasn't PR. It was like their social media intern that just like knows.
Yeah,
how
that doesn't get
exactly.
paid.
Exactly. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
That loses money for working for them. So. And years off their life.
Yeah. And LaCroix, like when they first did their thing and then they started to like trend, they sold the business. Right. So they're not even like the original.
Interesting. They're,
like some big soda water bought them. So like
big soda water,
yeah, the big fat fucking... cats at
exactly.
Evian.
I bet, I bet big soda water owns fucking Polar and Bubbly and
probably
all of the goddamn
all of them. I also wonder if their sales have skyrocketed, considering 30% of Americans participated in Dry January in 2022. You know how much soda water we drink.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know we have an opinion on them being called like ranch water and it has alcohol in it, and or like seltzer, and it's like, okay, you can't just start calling alcohol like hard water and then selling it. Like, I don't know. It's
wait,
weird.
Wait. I need you to back up. Okay. What is ranch water?
I need to hear about this. What is ranch water?
So it is a new one that Topo Chico actually came out with their own like hard seltzer, and it's called ranch water. And there's a cocktail that's like called ranch water. That's like a Southwestern thing.
That.
And it's like, hang on.
Yeah, it's like, this is the water that we drink on the ranch while we ranch. It's alcohol water, you know, like, ranch water. Yeah.
Yeah, there's...
Don't like
there's
it.
There's another, it's like with hard seltzer, with real tequila, ranch water, hard seltzer, Lone River Beverage Company. There's a lot of different ones. Like, apparently ranch water is a thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Originally, too, Kaylee, our logo is going to be...
Two Topo Chicos. Yeah.
And then they came, actually, like, right after we started the pod, they came out with an alcoholic seltzer water, and we were like, well, okay, rip.
Ugh, that sucks. I, even more off topic, I heard something really, that I don't know if it's gross or, like, upsetting or
perfect, like, perfect.
Or funny or interesting, or I don't know. So one of my, like, favorite bands, all-time bands, is Blink-182.
Me too! Mm-hmm.
Love Blink-182, mm-hmm. Like, 90s pop punk, nursery rhyme punk. Like, it's just sort of, like, my favorite sing-along. And my favorite album was one of their early ones, Dude Ranch. Do you remember Dude Ranch? And
yes.
It had, like, their breakout single. And I love Dude Ranch. And I never fucking understood, why is this album called Dude Ranch? I just sort of, like, accepted it for what it is. Like, I always, like, Blink-182 always had, like, really, like, funny innuendo or whatever. Like, but I never really questioned it. Earlier, maybe like a few months ago, I was listening to some podcast about Blink-182, and they were talking about that album, Dude Ranch, and they were like, so, do you know what Dude Ranch, like, why they named it Dude Ranch? Can you tell where I'm going here?
Ew.
Do you know?
Ew.
Have you put it together?
Yeah.
I don't think Kaylee has.
Absolutely not. She hasn't.
Nope. We're still lost.
And
on
I get
me.
It.
Yeah.
It had to be spelled out for me because I didn't understand why Dude Ranch was such, like, a fun Blink-182 album. So it's like, dude, like, the dude has, like, ranch dressing.
Get it. Got it. Of,
yeah.
Get it. Yeah.
So
that's
weird.
That's why it's called Dude Ranch.
Interesting.
I'm thinking like a Patrick Swayze sort of situation. I'm like so fucking...
Kaylee, I fucking love you. Well, in the realm of ranch talks, I worked at a campus pizza restaurant that was open late night that had a bar underneath. And Kaylee just reminded me that I used to call ranch sorority sauce because the extremely intoxicated sorority girls who were my same age when I worked there would come up to me and be like, my impression is, can I get some fucking ranch for my fucking slice? I need some fucking ranch. And like as the night would go on, like the ranch, like it would just get so much more like progressively slurred and accentuated was, in that conversation.
It was like Uncut Gems, but like before that was a thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I know. And like poor things, like they were just downing pizza slices, drowning them in fucking sorority sauce, and then just continuing to take shots downstairs at the bar. And like, I made fun of them because I was super fucking jealous. A, because I couldn't wear a fucking string fucking mini dress. And B, because I was working behind the counter, not fucking enjoying myself at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, and so. They were like in college having a great time. Their parents probably, you know,
yeah.
paid for all their shit. Yeah, so there's some hate there. I get it.
Mm-hmm. It's fine. I'm fine now. We've healed.
It reminds me though of when I was in college and I would go to pizza, the like little pizza place we had there, and ranch was like a really big fucking deal. But all of the kids ate like just would like take up that ranch so early on in the evening that like there wasn't enough ranch for all the other college kids
yes.
throughout the night. And so it'd go from ranch dressing and then to like this buttery garlic liquid mm-hmm. that people would then go to
Yum.
And then it would go to just sort of like a creamy garlic sauce that they had, and then even if they ran out of that, some people would resort to ketchup, putting like yes. dipping their fucking pizza in ketchup. Have you heard of this? It was fucking disgusting.
So, I have,
unless you like this. I'm sorry if I'm shaming you.
Yeah. Well, when I worked at Peg, it was there's a lot of Colorado transplants here that go to the U of O for school, mm-hmm. and they eat fucking honey on their pizza.
What?
I've had that. Yes. It's fucking good. And I'm sorry. I've tried it recently, and
yeah,
it will blow
I've heard it's great.
Your dick off. It is great. It is so good.
And then the only other one that we've got is I would not want to make any more ranch, so I would put out honey mustard.
Honey mustard.
Honey mo. It's a go-to.
I went through a phase where instead of dipping, I don't really like to dip fries in ketchup, but I will dip french fries in honey mustard. And so I went on this whole campaign that honey mustard was the new ranch, and I tried to get everyone to call it honey mo.
Oh my gosh, this is cheering me up so much, you guys. I have the shittiest day.
Katie, I am so sorry that you had a shitty day. I do want to make sure that we make time to fit in our awesome sponsors. So we're going to take a quick break, talk about our sponsors, and then we'll come back and hear about Katie's day and get into it a little bit more with Therapy Jeff. If you know me, you know I'm always drinking 5 NA beverages at one freaking time. So I love having different concoctions to switch things up. That's why Dry Hard Pod partnered with High Street Tonics, a woman-owned, locally crafted range of organic herbal bitters and honey cider vinegar tonics. The restorative tonics support digestion and well-being through their herbal properties, and they make the most amazing mocktails. Use the link in our bio to shop their website and use code DRYHARDPOD for 10% off when you purchase.
As you all know, I'm obsessed with Reframe app. It's the number one alcohol reduction app. It's built to help you drink less. Whether your goal is to cut back or quit entirely, Reframe is life-changing. Daily Zoom support groups, a community forum, and challenges, podcasts, TED Talks, you name it, over 100 resources are accessible in this app at any given time. You can download Reframe app on iOS, use the 7-day free trial, and use code KATY, Katie, for 10% off your subscription.
All right, we are back. I want to hear how everyone is doing, but I also have so many questions for Jeff, so I want to make sure we just get on into it. So, Katie, how are you feeling today?
I'm super excited that I'm not doing what I was doing today now. So it was good. It's just a lot. It was just a busy day, which is fine. Sometimes it's good. You can put your head down, check stuff off your list, and you feel really good. And then other days you're like, okay, the list isn't ending and I want to tap out and turn off my phone and turn on the TV and just zone out. So that's what I'm going to do after this. But I'm super excited to have Jeff on. I've been sending all of my family members his TikToks all week, like trying to get them to tell me I'm doing a good job with my podcast because Jeff is a guest. And I know my sister's obsessed with TikTok and she totally knows who you are too, Jeff. Oh, so
I'm flattered.
Yeah.
Yeah, Danny was like scrolling through his TikTok and we have different algorithms, but some stuff similar. And Jeff's TikTok popped up and I was like, babe, that's the person that's going to be on our podcast. And he was like, wait, that's Jeff? I was like, yeah, that Jeff. And he was like, that's really cool. And I was like, I know, I'm really cool. I do cool things.
Oh yeah, Jeff is really cool too. Yes.
Yeah, you're cool because I'm so cool. Like your coolness factor has gone up so much.
Exactly. It's exactly like high school. It's like all the people that you hang around, like he's cool. So therefore, like, yeah, you gave me a couple points. So thank you.
Yeah. Finally, fucking 25 years after being not cool in high school, I am cool. Were you too cool in high school? Oh, we'll get to how I am. But I want to know like where you were, like what like clique did you hang out with in high school?
Katie, do you want to take this one first?
Yeah. So I had a couple different phases. So my freshman year of high school, I moved to Oregon to live with my dad after not ever living with him in my life. Oh, wow. He had just been freshly out of prison. And I decided it was a good idea for me to tell my mom to fuck off and to move in with my dad. And so I dropped out my freshman year, just ran around with kids who were like smoking, drinking, doing drugs. I was kind of, you know, doing the same. But I was still kind of like maintain this like jock status. I'm pretty athletic and I enjoy. So I was kind of like the bad girl who like sometimes showed up to volleyball practice smelling like cigarettes. And then I stopped going to school. But when I moved back to Michigan, my mom like runs a a very tight ship. She knows what to do to get me back in line. And so I went to a school where there were 68 people in my graduating class.
Oh, shit.
And
that's small.
So I went from like 600 kids in my freshman class back to Michigan, where I grew up, with 68 people in my class. I was homecoming queen and captain of the volleyball team. And I, yeah. But there were 68 kids. Like, there wasn't a lot to fucking choose from, you guys. So, but yeah, so that was kind of, I was friends with everyone, I would say, and I definitely like to stick up for the underdog. So I was like pretty much all the time challenging my friends who were dicks, and you know, we would take turns being dicks, and it was all right. But yeah, I've been always been a social butterfly. And I also have some anxiety socially. So I think that's where the alcohol kind of played into a lot of it at a young age for me. But,
wow. I feel like there's, you told that story in like 90 seconds, but I feel like there's so many stories in that. Like,
there's you could go so off. Much. Yeah,
like, and if you were my client and we're in a therapy session right now, I'd be so excited to just fucking dive in.
To dig in.
Be like, what is going on here? There's that's
oh my
a
gosh. Well,
journey.
And Jeff, before high school, it was even deeper than that. I went to 6 different schools before I was a 6th grader. Yeah. Oh. So there's some shit for sure.
Yeah, there's
Kaylee,
a lot of shit.
Wait.
Yeah.
Kaylee, now you answer.
Okay. I feel like I'm like literally in a confessional booth. So Enema of the State was my favorite album, Jeff. And I asked my dad what an enema was. And he wouldn't tell me. And I had to like find out from another boy at school. So in middle school, I was... I don't know. Like I had like the emo phase that started at 13, and then I had like Hot Topic, frequent punch cards, like all my clothes were from there. And then in high school I was a cheerleader my freshman year, but then dyed my hair black like in the middle of the cheerleading season. And I was really into like body modification and like piercings. And so when I was 16, I like had the back of my neck pierced. And I was like in honors classes, but really resentful of the kids who were there because I was still totally like from a middle class family. But my dad had just like married my stepmom and the money had to be distributed through like more of the kids. And, all of the kids in my class like went snowboarding every weekend and were driving like brand new SUVs. And I had like a 1997 Mazda Protege. And I think I like resented a lot of the kids who had like normal fucking shit going on. So I was like cheerleading, but then very quickly after that like started kind of hanging out with the kids who like smoked cigarettes and all of that stuff. And I like was just kind of bratty and like I don't know, had this attitude that I was like above everyone else. And I only had like one friend in high school at the time, and we both had boyfriends who were like out of high school. Yeah, it was this whole thing. So I definitely don't have fond memories, and I was kind of like emo, but also like very much trying to be popular and going back and forth between those two. Who were you in high school, Jeff? Paint us a picture.
High school was, I mean, I loved high school, but it was a real rough time. But I went into high school as a little baseball player, where I was like, I really identified as being a little baseball player jock. And my like career path, what I thought it was going to be, is that like I was going to play second base for like the Chicago Cubs. I was gonna be a baseball player on my favorite team.
I love that. And when I was that age, I was like, who am I gonna get to second base with? That was like the thing that was on my mind.
Katie was giving hand jobs and watching Polar Express, so
it's fine.
Like, your parents would probably not allow us to come over. They'd be like, those girls smell like cigarettes, you can't hang out with them.
And you're going to be a baseball player, so don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways.
So I started out like, I'm going to be a baseball player. I was a good little baseball player. But then, tragically, my mom and stepdad, who I lived with in Santa Monica. My dad like lived in the valley, and there's like no fucking way I'm living in the valley. So I lived in Santa Monica with my mom and my stepdad, and they became addicted to drugs. They started like literally smoking crack. So
oh my God.
All of a sudden, so my mom, who's a therapist, and my stepdad,
oh Jesus,
yeah, you know, fucking therapists, my stepdad, who's a lawyer, real successful lawyer, like these like rich, like we were like millionaires, they start smoking crack.
Oh my God.
Wow. And everything just like totally, and I'm this privileged little, I don't know what fucking crack is. All I know is like what smoking weed is and what like drinking beer is. So yeah, then like right, life just sort of like turns like upside down. So I go from like little baseball player to like, I didn't like emo wasn't a thing back then. Before emo, it was goth, right? It was like yes, goth, yeah, or like raver, punk or something. Mm-hmm. So I was like all of those. And I like bleached my hair blonde, was spiking it up. I like painted my nails all these different colors. My like
hell yeah,
hair would turn different colors. I was like, I think I was just playing with like, what's my sexuality? Like I started, mm-hmm, like people are like, is he gay? Is he straight? Is he bi? Like, we don't quite know. It was the 90s. So it was like kind of cool, but also not really quite yet. But I got kicked off the baseball team because I was like too colorful. I like looked too colorful with like my nails and my hair.
Oh my God. Like, what the fuck?
I don't
fuck?
Know. So I got kicked off and I started to like not go to school, and I started to ditch school all the time. I wasn't like popular or not popular, but a lot of people knew me because I looked a very certain way, and they knew that, mm-hmm, I was always trying to ditch. Eventually, mm-hmm, I didn't graduate high school and I dropped out of high school because I got, mm-hmm, like all Fs in my like senior year for just like not showing up. So it was really fun, and I went on like so many adventures in Santa Monica and Los Angeles.
Cool.
But it was like a very fucked up time in my family because my parents were addicted to drugs my whole high school career. So
can I ask, did they recover from that said addiction, or is that still their lifestyle?
Yeah. So, and you know, their addiction like really affected just like how I felt about drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. So,
oh yeah,
it's all connected.
Right.
So when they started smoking crack, like they were getting it from these like crack dealers, these drug dealers that were like, holy shit, this is a fucking gold mine. Like the drug dealers right, were so excited, as they should be. And so they were like, mm-hmm, my parents were paying top dollar for,
oh my God, it's like that Always Sunny episode.
Yes. Where they're like, one yes, crack yes, rock, please. And he's like, $200. Yes. And they're like, that seems reasonable.
Exactly. So,
okay, continue.
So that was them. That was like, that was the episode that they're on. And so like they started, their money was getting drained so quickly. Although they had a lot, they eventually, after like 4 years of doing drugs, ran out of money.
Oh my God.
And they couldn't pay our fancy mortgage anymore. They couldn't like have their lifestyle. They lost their like fancy Jaguar and SUV. And so they ran out of money, and the drug dealers were like, cool, we tapped you. Like, you have nothing left to give. And the drug dealers bye, won't deal drugs anymore. My parents started to like spin out and go through like these horrible, mm-hmm, withdrawals. And they got into like these really big fights. The neighbors called the cops because it got like really scary. The cops took away my stepdad because he was high on crack. He went to jail for 6 months for like domestic abuse and having drugs and being on drugs. And since he was in jail for 6 months, my mom couldn't get drugs anymore because he was the one that always got it. So she just like became right, sober, and my stepdad became sober while in jail. And then he got out and they moved to a ranch, like an hour outside of, they like bought a ranch because they sold the house, bought a ranch. And then they like, mm-hmm, ran a bed and breakfast where they were like always, they just never smoked crack again. And that,
wow,
I
just love that for them. I don't love that for you necessarily, but I love that story for them, which is also how I feel about my own dad's recovery addiction, like recovery and addiction, you know, mm-hmm, it's like,
what a fucking roller coaster.
Love that. Yeah.
Total fucking roller coaster. Yeah.
Dude, people love a fucking comeback story too. So much.
Yeah. So, I have lots of different stories from that too, where, you know, that I can just talk about for hours, but I'm doing pretty good today. You asked how I was doing.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this is where I'm supposed to say, if I were a therapist, Jeff, I would be so excited to jump into all of that.
Oh, you would be. You. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Kaylee, I do feel like we need to just have like an episode dedicated to each of us. It just like tells our life story in chronological order. It'd be fun to do.
Yeah, that would be really fun. Yeah. Like a memoir for
a tell-all.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Wow. So that, I mean, intro to alcohol, intro to substances and addiction. So yeah, that's a lot. It's funny that we both, like, we all kind of went through that alternative phase in high school, though. I feel like we could have all hung out
definitely
in the parking lot.
I was gonna say, I like friend jumped and definitely did the same thing that Jeff, you were talking about, just trying to figure out what you were, how you wanted to dress, like who, how, like, you identified sexuality wise as well. I went through all of that, and you know, in one picture I see myself like blonde and Abercrombie, and then in the other I've got like my big skate shoes, my Etnies, and my Volcom like low riders, and you know, just like fucking puka shells and shit on. Yeah, and then I also went through this, like, they called me the hippie when I moved from Oregon to Michigan. Because, you know, you hear Eugene, Oregon, and you think hippie. So it's just interesting how that all plays out over those. It's 4 years, but it feels like a lifetime.
Oh, my God. Those fucking 4 years. There's been no other 4 years that felt as long as those 4 years.
Yes.
I really felt like I had something that excited me to respond to, and I lost it. So I...
So, Jeff, usually in the first part of our episode, we like to go over this section that we call the drunk crypt of stories, like where we release one of our drunken stories to just get listeners excited about listening to where we are now and all of that. But how did, so you're over 550 days alcohol free. How did that start for you? What did your relationship look like with alcohol?
Oh, you know, so yeah. So I saw like my parents getting addicted to substances and drinking a lot of alcohol. And that was, even though maybe like on the outside, I was just like, cool, yeah, I don't care. I'm going to like use this as an excuse to fuck around. It was very anxiety provoking to like see your parents totally shit faced and fucking out of their
deteriorating.
Yeah. That put a bad taste in my mouth. But I also, but like my friends, like in high school, we were all starting to like experiment with drugs and alcohol. And it was alcohol was the first thing that we started to experiment with because that was what we were able to get our hands on. Stealing, you know, our parents' alcohol or like asking people. Did you ever do the thing where you like ask people outside of a convenience store to go? You did that. Yeah, I feel like it's a rite of passage.
I did it once, but then I think people started getting busted at this specific place we would all go to, so I got too afraid. Yeah,
I get it. It's very scary. Yeah. So you know, I started to like drink and I started to smoke a little bit of weed when I was in high school, but I hated the fucking taste of it. I hated the taste of beer. I hated the taste of alcohol. There was nothing I could mix into my like alcoholic drink that would make me like not want to fucking gag. And if I drank too much, it would make me want to throw up. And I was like easy. I would barf a lot. I would like pass out. I'd like black out after two drinks. Like my body did not fucking like it. My like brain didn't like it because I'd feel really anxious. It felt like I was like just allergic to it. Or I also got piercings when I was a kid, when I was in high school, and I got an eyebrow ring. I look so fucking cool. But like my eyebrow ring, my body was like, we don't like this. And it started to like push the eyebrow ring out.
Yes.
It started to reject it. Mm-hmm. My body was rejecting everything, whether it was like an eyebrow ring or some other piercing or alcohol or drugs, whatever I'd put into it, my sensitive little fucking turd of a body that I wanted to be like, a rock star and like hang with my friends and all the hot chicks, but I couldn't do it. So there was like a lot of shame and embarrassment when it came to drinking or doing drugs. And the only drug that I enjoyed doing and that I was able to like have fun with was ecstasy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so love that.
Yeah, I love that. Love ecstasy. Love that for me.
I love ecstasy. Yeah.
I did so much ecstasy. Yeah,
your inhibitions.
Well, I was going to say, especially in the 90s, that's when you, like, that was just such a come up for drugs like ecstasy, I feel mm-hmm. like. By the time it got around
in rave mm-hmm. culture, like, yeah.
Yes, yeah. By the time I started using ecstasy, it was like, someone was like, you know, that's basically meth, right? I'm like, is that why I ate off my own face until 9 o'clock in the morning?
That's what you do, yeah. Yeah, I loved ecstasy. But there was like a night where I did some ecstasy and it was so upsetting that I decided to never do it again.
Oh.
And that was when, and I became like so into doing ecstasy that like the drug dealer that I was getting it from, like he would just give it to me for free. And then I would report back like what it was like how much, it felt like or what the cut felt like. And so that he could be like, okay.
You were an intern.
I was an intern that got like free ecstasy. And so that one night he's like, hey, here's a new batch. Can you do it? Tell me what it's like. And I said, okay. And I took it and I was out. And like maybe like an hour into it, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm seeing things. Like I'm starting to hallucinate. And that does not feel okay to me. So I like quickly like got into a cab and raced home. And when I got home, I like took out my key to get into my little apartment. And the key was huge. Like this was like the biggest, heaviest. It was so hard to lift up and it was so, and I'm looking at this huge key and I'm trying to fit it into this teeny tiny keyhole and I'm just like, oh, and I can't get it in and it's taking forever. I felt like I was out there for hours, but somehow it like shrinks down to the right size. I get into my apartment and I'm just like, fuck it. I need to just like do something that I usually do that like feels comfortable. And for me, that's eating Cheez-Its. So I'm like eating Cheez-Its and I forget how to swallow. So it's just so many Cheez-Its just in my cheeks and I can't get it out and I can't swallow it. So I was like, fine, I'm just gonna like turn on some Blink-182. And so I like go to my little blue iMac and I turn on iTunes to like get on to like start playing Blink-182. But the mouse is going like in and out. Instead of like on the screen up and down, it's going like into the computer and then out past me, my body. So I can't click on it. So then I'm just like, I lay down my bed in silence with so many Cheez-Its and everything is going crazy. And that was the last time I ever did ecstasy.
How old were you? Can I ask?
I was 22.
Yeah.
The only time that I've done ecstasy, I had a really rough go of it too, and I've never done it since. But never to that extent. That is, forgetting how to swallow sounds fucking terrifying.
Yeah, I had a situation like that with mushrooms, mm-hmm. where we didn't have a scale, and I was 19, maybe 18, 19, and I tripped balls and threw up. The whole thing, thought the throw up was my teeth, right?
Oh,
putting
no.
them back in my mouth. Like, I'm not kidding you guys. It's like a bad movie. And I was dating this guy at the time. And he was like, you know, I don't like to hallucinate. So I'll be your guys' babysitter. And he was probably 7 years older than the rest of us, which should have been like my first fucking red flag. I was 19. Yeah. And he was like trying to cheer me up because I was like passing out. And I'm like, I'm stuck in my head like this. This is just who I am now.
That's the worst, is like, this is forever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was like trying to make me laugh. And then all of a sudden he's like, look, look. And he grabs like a bag of pills from the glove compartment in his van. And I'm like, what's happening? But I'm still like not okay, barely conscious. And he runs over to the dumpster and crouches down next to the dumpster and starts to eat all of the pills really quickly, and he was joking,
What? Why would he think? Was like, no. What?
I mean, guys, this is such a bad situation. Anyways, I found out the next day that he had an oxy addiction I had no idea about. And he like threw away all of his pills while I was on my journey. And then the following day, I woke up and I never have seen him since. And he stole $700 from my drawer, my bedside drawer. So, yeah, I don't overindulge in psychedelics after that experience.
Yeah, it's things can go downhill pretty quickly. Clearly.
Well, and we were like, let's do them in public. So we took him in a coffee shop and then walked around outside and at night. Mm. Yeah, I know. It's fine. No one can see your faces but me and concerned.
Jeff and I are just looking a little concerned, but we're okay.
It's okay.
So... yeah, I think I'm curious, Jeff, like what, so that was kind of the moment that you decided that you weren't going to do ecstasy anymore, but you've kind of pretty much been sober for a while. Like you never really enjoyed the taste of alcohol, but kind of felt that shame around not liking it. And I can just totally relate because I was that person who would tell, like, those people are just a bunch of like fucking narcs. Like I was definitely in that, especially in that phase of my life, in that high school, like I wanted to show that like I was a badass. And for some reason that meant like, I'll take whatever pill anyone hands me. Like I'll do whatever drug, I don't care. Like just very much like flippant with like all of that shit. And so, and now looking back, it's just so fucked up to like make fun of someone because they don't want to drink. But that, I mean, is huge. So I that must have been really tough, but also like I'm glad you weren't just fucking puking in the corner at every single party or like that, because that was me. Like I just embarrassed myself all the fucking time, so who was I to like judge, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's so important, it feels so important when you're in high school to like be cool and keep up with everybody else, and that means like a lot of times that means like getting fucked up and doing a lot of drugs or drinking a bunch. And the peer pressure is just like so, so powerful. And if I don't, if we don't, or if I wasn't like keeping up with like everybody and how much they're drinking, then I felt like such a fucking loser. So I developed these like, I don't know, skills, I guess, or ways of like making people think that I'm drinking a lot, but like pouring it out into the sink or pouring it out outside or like putting more water or juice in my glass or something and just acting drunk, like pretending I was just as drunk as everybody else, falling all over the place while like battling with this weird high school bullshit internal shame that like lasted way past high school, like went like all the way through college.
I was going to say, too, the peer pressure actually gets worse as people start to split off and decide what type of drinker they are. If you find yourself in a realm with people who are drinking much heavier than the average, they typically, and I've been this person, will, come on, why aren't you drinking? You're not going to be that hungover tomorrow. Don't worry, your work won't care. Like, there is so much of that, and I participated in that a ton, so... I get it.
Yeah, you definitely, you don't want to be the odd person out. So you, you know, buy all the shots and bring them to the table so that, you know, everyone has to take one or whatever. Like you're, so encouraging of those behaviors, because if no one else is drinking as much, if no one else is drinking as much as you, then the spotlight's on you. So, I remember what I was going to say earlier was just back to like in high school and trying to figure everything out, like, it's really interesting seeing folks that are, you know, younger than us. And like, what Katie and I always get confused, like, is Gen Z the one that's our parents, or that's the new one and Gen X are our parents?
That's Gen X. Gen X is our parents.
Okay, Gen Z, like being able to see like queer people like and know that they exist and are like represented in high school, or people like, at least not everywhere, but feeling comfortable being in those relationships. And like when I was that age, I had no idea that bisexuality was even a thing. I had never heard of it. I had never known that that was an option. So I was just so confused for so long. And even talking to like people that I knew at my work who were gay, reaffirming the fact that like I wasn't gay and being like, okay, like, so if I'm not a lesbian, then I'm just straight and all these feelings are like nothing, or like, is this normal? Like, so I don't know. That was another aspect of like high school and college, and like, I don't know. It can still be fucking confusing, to be honest.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's totally still fucking confusing. But there was just a little study released, I think, that where they like, at, so there are some Gen Zers who are adults. They're just starting to become like, I think there's like, I think the like 22 years old might be like the oldest Gen Zer. And they asked the adult Gen Z people, like, how many of you identify as queer or LGBTQ? And almost 25% of them.
Wow, awesome.
Identify as being queer, while millennial adults, only about like 10% of them identify. And then it's even like less for Gen X and boomers, obviously. Yeah. So it's just like, that's fucking awesome. Like, I love how it's trending.
The growth.
Yeah. At least something's getting better. You know, it makes me feel optimistic.
Well, and I feel like there is so much conditioning for me around that, because my relationship with adolescence and being a teenager was very much so centered around male attention. And so I was really encouraged by men my whole life to engage sexually with women, like on a total like hetero level, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was really confused by that for a really long time. And then I got to an age where I was like, oh, like you didn't want me to like other women and support other women and love other women. You wanted me to interact with them on a sexual level for your pleasure. Got it. Now I'm really confused about how I feel. So, and that's like coming from a mostly heterosexual white woman also, you know, I can't even imagine what it would be like for someone else.
Yeah. I remember I was at a call. It's so funny because now you think back and you're like connecting the dots, right? And being like, oh, that makes sense. And I remember I was at a college party and it's like someone like, oh, like whoever, like, what do you want for your birthday? And he was like, I want to see two girls making out. And I was like, hand fucking shot up in the air like Hermione Granger, like, I volunteer. And then
I fucking love
years
you.
Years later, I'm like, huh, I might be bi. I don't know, man. It's weird. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I remember. I mean, it was just like you. The message that like all the boys had to do, or the thing that would like turn us on the most, was like objectifying women and getting them to like make out with them. And there was so much, even the culture. The commercials that were like, that we were, there's this one, I don't know if you two remember, but like, there's this one like beer or Bud Light or Budweiser, some sort of fucking commercial where they were just like, it was about these like twins, like these hot twins that were like on this commercial, and they'd be like, and twins. And they would like show these like, and it was almost like we wanted these like hot twins to make out with each other. Like that's what they were sort of like suggesting. Yes.
How many levels does that just cross? And it's indicative of the porn industry. I mean, is what it is. It's just so. Yeah. Wow.
Well, my dad watched The Man Show. Do y'all remember The Man Show? With like fucking Jimmy Kimmel. And there was this one guy who was, it was girls jumping on trampolines was a segment.
Yes.
And then there was this one guy who could chug like an entire like pitcher of beer in a few seconds or something. It was like this crazy thing. And this poor guy, like every single episode, and he ended up passing away. Like,
whoa.
Yeah. Jesus. So anyway, that was like the type of television and the type of person, like the primary parent in my household was participating in. And we had the Bud Light girls with the, you know, the like swimsuits and the jet skis, like in my dad's garage, which was like the man cave where he would like hide out and smoke weed. So yeah, it was very much like a thing. So anyway,
yeah, when my dad was in my life, it was very much so the same sort of, they're Gen Xers, right, Kaylee?
Both our dads. My dad's gonna be 60 soon.
Oh
so they're on the cusp.
Yeah,
My parents are 53.
Oh, total Gen Xers.
Yeah, and I think they were like 20 when they had me. They were young too. So like my mom was like a hipster in Portland who listened to Radiohead and Tool. Oh, like that was her.
That is
yeah.
amazing.
She's the shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and she was like a gamer. She seems like the shit.
And she's she's the shit. I mean, she was a fucking, you know, a hard ass, but I'm so grateful for that. She's also like 5'4 and like 110 pounds.
But
like,
she beat your ass and you knew it and you're scared of her.
She did. Yes. I did. I was, yeah. But no, she was so funny. She was like telling me about how she used to like peg her pants and they were so tight she couldn't get them off of her feet. Like that was like late 80s. Like I know. It was just a very interesting she had an interesting upbringing as well. So there's a lot there. So Jeff, it sounds like there was, you know, that relationship with alcohol was complicated. How did that look when you become a therapist? Like, was your relationship with alcohol changed when you started, you know, in that realm?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It got more complicated.
Yeah, I imagine.
Because before being a therapist... So I became a therapist when I was 24. So I was really young and I was a little baby therapist. Mm. But before then, like I was saying, I had a complicated, weird, shamey sort of relationship with alcohol where I didn't really like to do it. I also had like a horrible experience of like seeing my parents being addicted to substances and alcohol. So it was really just sort of like, I eventually was just like, fuck it. Like, I don't like drugs. I don't like alcohol. I'm very clear. And anybody who like around 23, 24, I was just like, and anybody else who's like fucking with alcohol or addiction, I was like very black and white, where I was just like, nope, I don't like it. I don't like it. It's unhealthy. You made bad choices.
Interesting.
It's like the choices mm-hmm. you made. It wasn't like I wasn't looking at it as like a disease model, or I didn't have any like compassion around it. I was still very much angry with my mom.
That's what I was going to say. It checks out with that whole situation.
Yeah, because exactly. It seemed like they really did make a choice to go down that road, or at least, you know,
that's what
the way that you saw it at the time. Yeah,
totally. And it was the whole cliche thing of like, you're choosing drugs over your son, over your kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a choice you made. And I fucking hate you for it. So a lot of like, I had a lot of charged up feelings with drugs and alcohol. Then I go ahead and I start being a therapist. And, the therapist, like, so I mainly would just see like teenagers or middle schoolers, and that was great. I loved talking to them and being a therapist for them. And they were like so little, like in middle school, that they didn't really start to like get exposed to a lot of drugs and alcohol, or at least the kids that I was talking mm-hmm. to in Oregon. Mm-hmm. But then once I started to like start my private practice and see more adults or people in their 20s and 30s, they were coming in with like addiction problems or drinking problems. And if I was going to be a good therapist, if I was going to like be effective, then I needed to like have compassion for them instead of being like automatically angry with them and like seeing my mother in them or something. I tried to avoid seeing clients that had like any sort of addiction or alcohol problem. And you can only do that for so long. Like, it's just
and especially I was just want to interject mm-hmm. here because this is so fascinating. And especially because most people who don't have like a physical dependency on alcohol don't identify that they have addiction. They have an addiction to alcohol. Like, there's a certain level of alcohol use disorder that's so normalized that you, as their therapist, like, then is it your job to tell them like you have an alcohol problem, even though they've never even considered that like flashed across their mind? You know, it wouldn't have never for me years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Kaylee?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, that's crazy because, yeah, I've been there where I'm like, everything feels terrible and my relationship shitty and my work shitty. And I never was like thinking when I was telling my therapist that at the time that so much of that was influenced by how I felt about or just like my relationship with alcohol and how much I was drinking. But I, you know, when I did tell her that I on my own came up with that decision to like not drink that was something I really wanted to try and work on, even though it took me years and like a whole other therapist later to like get to that point. Like, she was very encouraging and, you know, gave me those resources. But yeah, it must be hard to see people and have that thought of like, I know that that, you know, that behavior and alcohol are like tied to each other. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know where I'm going with that, but just that thought is a thought.
No, that thought is a thought. That's true. And so the first part was just sort of like trying to like have compassion and not be automatically judgy mm-hmm. for anybody that's drinking or has like a substance abuse problem. And then it was mm-hmm. what you're both saying, where it's just like, okay, there are some clients that like are clearly, I mean, from my point of view, it seemed like alcohol is really getting in the way of a lot of things, their job or their friends or their relationships or money, happiness, you know, mental health. And so I need to be able to figure out, like, once I work through this thing of like not being so reactive to people that are drinking, how can I talk to them and be like, hey, it looks like there might be a problem here or an issue with drinking. And there's so much there's a lot of resistance to accepting that, right? And there's like a lot of stigma around like, am I an alcoholic and what does that mean? And I should feel ashamed or embarrassed or guilty. But also like, you don't want to change your relate. A lot of people might not want to change their relationship with alcohol because mm-hmm. it's a part of their fucking day or routine, or it's not that big of a deal. And they like, if they look at it as a problem or as an addiction or something like that, that means that they like most likely should probably like change their relationship with it or stop drinking or really cut back or something. And figuring out how to like talk to people about that and bring that up with them in therapy, that's a really tricky thing to do.
Right. Yeah. That makes total sense. So you had to probably be in therapy yourself to get to a point where you were able to navigate that without relying on your own personal reference for the relationship mm-hmm. in substance abuse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've gone to so much fucking therapy. I don't know, I've had like maybe a total of like 15 or so years of therapy with lots of different therapists. I love it. I'm very into it. And a lot of that therapy was about just sort of like talking about my own reactions to my clients mm-hmm. so that I'm like mm-hmm. a good, compassionate, you know, not super judgy therapist.
Always a little judgy, never too judgy.
Exactly. So now I'm not like an addiction specialist or anything, but if you're going to be mm-hmm. a therapist, you're going to be talking about addiction sometimes, or alcohol, or how the substances are that you're using are like affecting your day to day. And it's something that I feel very comfortable talking about, but it's still probably, it might be at like top three, one of the hardest things to like counsel or treat is somebody that has mm-hmm. a substance abuse or alcohol abuse issue.
How many years have you been a therapist for?
17, 18.
What percentage would you say has been either personally impacted by their relationship with alcohol or been impacted by a loved one's or family member's?
Oh, probably, if I had to guess, somewhere around 90%.
Yeah.
If not 100, crazy. But like definitely in the 90s.
What an impactful thing. Like, that is so crazy. That's wild. Makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, and then when you think about like, I mean, we did a whole episode on big alcohol, but how, you know, it's a $1 billion industry.
Like multi-mil, like, yes.
Yeah. Insane. A $1 billion industry.
Bajillion D. What's your favorite made up number that you guys say? Like, what's your go-to?
I mean, it's usually like a gazillion. Is that, I think that's made up.
I sometimes say a zilly, but I don't know.
I mean, this podcast in itself has made me realize how much I swear, but I always just say like a fuck ton.
Same.
Dude, like he must make like a fuck ton, you know?
I love that. No. Yes.
I remember when I was a kid, I was like obsessed with trying to figure out like what is the highest number. I assumed, as maybe a kid does, or maybe this isn't something that you would assume, but like I assume that like the numbers end. Like you get to a number and then yeah. you get to the highest number and there's no more numbers after that.
Yeah. Just like you can dig to China. Yeah. It's like the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the like infinity did not make sense to me. Still, I can't wrap my head around infinity.
No, like, makes no same. Sense.
So I thought that like, so then I learned that the highest number that I knew about was a centillion. And a centillion Ooh. Is a one with 27 zeros after it, if I can remember that correctly. I think that's true. And I was like, that must be it. There's no other number. Like 27 zeros after a one, like there's no way we can get to 28. Like that didn't, it's not possible. Like 27 is definitely the end of the zeros.
Yeah. It's Turns already too many.
Yeah.
I have a question. I want to know, Jeff, like what, if anything, have you noticed that's different about yourself? And also kind of talking us through, you and alcohol were never like BFFs throughout your life, but you kind of have this date that's longer than either Katie or I have been sober of this like 550 days. So kind of, was there anything that signified like that change to like, yep, for sure, I'm not even gonna try, and you know, like the peer pressure doesn't have anything over me anymore, like I'm gonna do my own thing and I'm not gonna drink? And then how has that been for you since then in terms of like your relationship with peer pressure and shame around drinking and how you feel about yourself?
Yeah, there's lots
long
of questions.
I'm sorry, that was like five questions in one. I'm really guilty of doing
no,
that.
No, I want every one of those questions answered, though. I am on the edge of my seat, you guys. We're going to have like a much shorter episode than what I want. Sad.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll try to answer those questions. Okay. So I am a very good therapist, and I have like good compassion for my clients when they talk about drinking or doing drugs. I'm not as good with my non-clients. So if you're not paying me to be compassionate, I can't fucking be compassionate. It's maybe what it comes down to. No, yeah. That was a joke, but maybe not really.
No, but people need, like, I really appreciate tough love and I feel like I need it sometimes. So I don't think that that's a bad quality to have, especially in a friend who's like invested in you and cares about your well-being. I take it as a compliment.
There you go. I like that reframe.
I think she's talking about me.
She might be. It especially came up with the my partners. So anybody I was dating, if they would get even just like a little, sort of tipsy, if I could like tell that their personality changed, then all of a sudden it made me real fucking anxious. And I wasn't a super like, I'm an amazing boyfriend. Like you could probably tell.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah.
I'm the best. But if you like start to drink.
Marry me.
If you start.
Katie's already married.
Sorry, Steve. I love you.
Nobody love you, Steve.
He's like, don't apologize. Like you can marry him. It's fine. He's therapy.
Sorry, Steve. I'm all of a sudden I get like real sort of distant and disconnected. I'm not like a dick, but I'm just like, I don't want to fucking be around this. So, and it's like mostly probably because like, you know, my mother did that, you know, was an addict and she was my primary attachment figure when I was a kid. And now I'm like dating you and you're my primary attachment figure. And now all of a sudden, like I'm automatically triggered. And you can feel that if you're like dating me or you're married to me, whatever you're with, like you can tell that like, I'm not the same anymore. And I was just like, well, this is just how it's going to be. Like, I'm going to date people or be with people that are like going to have like a drink, and I need to try to be okay with it. But I was like, never really that great. I like kept on getting disconnected, and it felt really judgy. Like you felt judged by me if you're my girlfriend or my partner. yada, yada, yada. Eventually, like, I was dating somebody who was a little, who would like drink all the time. Not maybe, maybe problematic, maybe not, but like she would always have a whiskey. Like it was just like, it was always something that she like enjoyed having in her hand. I was getting like really turned off by it. That relationship only lasted a couple months. Mm-hmm. I go back on Hinge and I find somebody on Hinge that like in their profile is like, I'm sober. And I was like, why the fuck haven't I dated somebody sober so like ever? What the fuck is wrong with me that I'm not looking for somebody who's dry or sober?
Yeah. So I was like, ooh, interesting. Like, what is that saying about me right now? Uh-huh. Crazy. Yeah,
exactly. Cool. So then I go on a date and we hit it off and we're still dating. And it was, you know, 550 or so days ago that we started dating.
Aww. And
I haven't had a drink since dating her. And before, when I would like have a drink, it was just like a few sips of a drink that I would have. So now I just feel free and liberated. I'm only fucking dating sober chicks or dry chicks. Like this is like, this is,
it's done. It's a deal.
I've decided like this is how my life is going to be. I don't have to fucking worry about it. Mm-hmm. She feels like I'm supporting her. I'm not supporting her. I mean, it looks like I'm supporting. I'm just not fucking drinking. This is so selfish.
You're just like finally with someone that aligns. Exactly. In the sobriety realm. Mm-hmm. I bet Steve feels like that now because Steve, my partner, he became sober, curious, and just like a maybe once a year drinker 3 years before I quit drinking.
Oh, interesting.
And when I continued to drink, we actually had this huge space grow between us. Like it was just a very, we had already been together for years. So it was just really easy to like split up the time that we had together is the time I was drinking with my friends and the time I was spending with him. And now it's just like, we're both fucking sober all the time. And it's crazy. It's cool. And his once a year drinking is gone. He's not drinking at all. So yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I am definitely guilty of when I'm around friends and they've all been drinking or sometimes I get stuck being the DD. I'm just like, I'm just so annoyed and I won't like say anything, but I'll do the like, it's fine. So like, no. So like, where is your, can you actually just tell me your address so I can put it in my phone? So that way my GPS can tell me and I don't have to rely on you to give me directions because you're not paying attention and you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Help me help you. Please just like help me help you get you the fuck out of my car so that I can go home and watch Love Island Australia season 3 and fuck off, you know?
I mean, you like, do you, you know? I think.
Okay.
So, Jeff, now you're not drinking and life is good. It's liberated the shit out of you, especially, I mean, I imagine that's what, was that just the beginning, like 2020?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like mid-2020 when you started dating your partner probably or sometime in that year.
Yeah, we started dating August of 2020, I think.
Yeah. So I imagine that was probably a really, for us, pivotal during the pandemic to quit drinking alcohol indefinitely. Like where it just became something you didn't even have to make space for anymore in your brain. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that allowed you to open up to, you know, explore a lot of other things to get you through that time, which is really cool.
Yeah. It's interesting thinking about it that way. It really did sync up with like, now I'm not fucking going out to bars or restaurants with friends. And there's just not a lot of alcohol around me at all. And now we're slowly, like there's been, you know, we're kind of heading back into like, you know, post-pandemic life maybe. So there's been like some like restaurants and bars. I don't know if I've gone to a bar, but like I've like hung out with my friends who do drink sometimes and they know how I feel about drinking. So I think like they're super conscious of like, do we even to, like, Jeff is going to like maybe feel some feelings about it and how important is it for us to drink. But even if they do, like I'm at this place now where I'm just like, I'm going to like, I can just go and they're fine. They don't feel rejected. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Like I can just leave. And there's so, you know, I can continue to work on like me getting like weirdly triggered about like seeing people drink, which I am working on it, but I can also just fucking leave. Like, yeah. I don't have to like try to cope and tolerate that situation. And I'm at an age now of like 41 years old where like, I don't give a shit. I don't have the peer pressure anymore where I like have to fucking hang or like, you know.
Well, I was going to say like letting go of that peer pressure by in the first part of my sobriety, Kaylee will confirm this. I said no to everything. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, like why? I can't. There's no way. And then I kind of was able to change my perspective on what felt like FOMO. It wasn't like that anymore. I was excited to have a night by myself at my house. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of really leaned into that. And that was the first time in my life that I was exhibiting any other kind of attachment style than an anxious attachment style. So it was really healing for me in that perspective, because otherwise, I mean, I was always making plans. My calendar was full, like maxed out all the time with social events. I was planning events. I was doing things, you know, constantly. So I feel like sobriety was really good for my nervous system in that aspect.
Yeah.
Where I like always wasn't putting myself in a fight or flight mode with people and trying not to drink and then, you know, all the things. So
it is interesting though, as things have been opening up, like I feel like I'm still learning what I am and what I'm not comfortable with.
Yeah.
Just because I have gotten opportunities. I've gone on, you know, one vacation with Katie, which was super cool to have a sober buddy, but
so
two
fun.
Vacations where every single person was drinking except for me. I went out with coworkers where we went to three different bars just a couple weekends ago and I was sober. And so I'm just still trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And especially in a work setting, I really want those people to still invite me out and I really want to make those connections and be friends with those people. But if people I were already friends with asked me to do the same thing, I'd be like, fuck no. So I still get some of that.
Oh my gosh, that's the
best. Yeah, I still get some of that wanting to fit in, wanting to make sure everyone knows that I'm cool. And I emphasize the fact that I don't drink, but, you know, I'm California sober so that they know that I'm like still like, you know, down to hang, like hint, hint, wink, wink. So I don't know. It's tough. It's still tough now that things are opening up just to figure out what I can and can't fuck with, I guess. The journey continues. What do you think has been like your key takeaways since being sober for that amount of time? Obviously, like sober people dating sober people is dope, but anything else that has been, you know, have you been blowing your own mind with epiphanies? Because I feel like that's been happening for Katie and I. We're like, holy shit.
You know, for me, I feel like it's released me from any type of anxiety in like that's connected to like to drinking. And and I sort of like drinking is just so, if you're going to be social, drinking is going to be a thing whether you're doing it or not. Like it's just going to be a fucking, you have to navigate it somehow. And whether it's like being around people that are drinking or if you're going to have a drink or how much you're going to drink or how you're going to feel tomorrow morning or whatever fucking decision you make about it or what you're going to look like if you're like not holding a drink or something. Like there's just like a lot of questions around drinking and how you're going to handle or how I was going to handle it. And it would just bring up anxiety. And so not drinking has made me feel, and you both have like said this, but it's just so fucking liberating that I don't have to fucking think about it. I feel liberated. I feel free. It's not a thing that makes me feel anxious. And even if I had like a really good relationship with alcohol, I would still have to fucking think about it and plan around it and be like, how much am I drinking? And I'm monitoring how much I'm taking in and how I'm going to feel the next day. And it's also like, I'm going to spend a ton of money. Drinks are so much fucking money. And I love saving money. So I'm saving money. I'm feeling liberated. I'm like totally into like being with people that are also dry or dating people that are not drinking. And it's just sort of like, I don't have to worry about it.
That's actually something that we haven't talked about on the podcast because Kaylee and I were both in relationships prior to not drinking. So for anyone that's listening that is sober or sober curious, you could totally date fucking other sober people, right? I mean, and sometimes that comes loaded with relationships with addiction and things like that. But now that sober curiosity is becoming more widespread, there are apps. There are dating apps, sober dating apps. And I'm like, this is fucking cool. And you can kind of like rate your sobriety. Like, what kind of sober are you? Or why are you sober? And it just kind of gets that right out of the way, which I think is really cool.
Hell yeah. That's what I have to say about like this entire fucking conversation. I just want Jeff to be like our third forever now.
It's all so fucking good. I do want to ask one more thing, Jeff. What Kaylee and I discovered you through TikTok. You have like 900,000 followers or something fucking unreal, and like 3 million likes on your videos, and they're gold. All of the content is fantastic, even if I feel attacked by it sometimes. It's fine. It's all compassion, you know what I mean? Like, you're all coming at it from a point of love
and just a way that I don't know, I feel like really resonates with me, and that I just understand, like, it's sinking in, which sometimes doesn't happen, and I, you know, so I appreciate it. Anyway, go ahead, Katie.
Well, yeah, that was what I was gonna ask, is how did you decide, oh, I'm gonna get into this short video shit on TikTok? Like, how did you start that account? How did that come to be? And what an amazing and like pivotal time for it to show up too. I feel like we're like just where we're at as a collective.
Yeah. Well, I run a therapist directory called therapyden.com. And I was,
ooh, cool. Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out like a way to market the therapist directory to, I don't know, Gen Zers and millennials. And I was also really obsessed with TikTok during the pandemic, or before the pandemic, where it was just like, I loved what was going on. It was like really like easy, fun, short form video. And I was like, I feel like I can do this. I feel like there's an avenue here where I can like inform people on mental health stuff. And like therapy and mental health is like really trending now.
Finally. Yay.
Yeah. Stigma is starting to go down.
Yes. So sobriety and mental health, yes, too. Like, I feel like they're so
fucking exactly healthy.
And I used to have a podcast and I like really enjoyed the creativity part of that, but I didn't have it anymore. So I was like, making TikToks, trying to like condense mental health topics or something like kind of fun and silly into 60 seconds or less is a really great creative challenge for me. I think I know how to fucking go viral. Let's do it. So I was cool, bored, and I like wanted to take up the challenge, and I started making videos, and it took off really quickly. And now I'm addicted to getting the likes and the views.
Yes.
And there's nothing I can do about that. That's my addiction, and I'm totally fucking fine with it right now.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, that's how it got started.
Has it brought any opportunities your way, do you feel like? Like, what kind of started happening as your videos went viral and you were like, wow, I have this fucking hidden talent and I know the code.
Right. Well, the coolest part is just like the community of other like therapy and mental health creators that are on TikTok or Instagram. Mm-hmm. So now I have this new community of like therapy creators, and they're all so sweet and they're all very lovely, and I love the connections that I've made. It's also like I've now have like more opportunities to like make money off of doing this. I haven't made any money yet, but there's like different types of like Hulu just emailed me a few days ago.
What? Hell yeah. Shut the fuck up.
Hulu was like, what's up, Therapy Jeff? We love what you're doing. And we're like about to like release this like psychological thriller. We want you to watch it. Shut and like, yeah, could you watch it and then like make a fucking TikTok about it? And I was like, maybe. Like, yeah, send me the movie and I'll think about it. So now there's like, and so like the Biden campaign contacted me.
You're a paid content creator. Yeah. That is literally what that is. You are an influencer.
So I'm like an influencer. And I was able to be like, hey, Biden campaign, I'm like kind of like a Bernie bro and I love like Elizabeth Warren. Like, that's my jam. So I'm not gonna like make content for you, but let me know.
Good for you. Fucking good for you. Let me know if someone else comes around more progressive and we're doing something different.
Then I'll get into it. So there's like these like amazing, really weird like opportunities to be an influencer and make a little bit more money and like get even more reach. So
cool.
Yeah, that's fun.
Well, and then you can just do more of that important shit that actually, you know, resonates and reaches people like me, who's scrolling through TikTok at like 2 a.m. with stuff that's actually like really helpful and beneficial for them. So,
yeah. Well, and it's cool that like Hulu could potentially be paying you so that other people can have free access to your knowledge.
Exactly.
Like that scene, that is so amazing how mm-hmm. that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cool.
Very cool.
Even though we've, again, just totally fangirling. I just think it's so fucking cool to talk to you. I think you're just like such a fucking wealth of knowledge. And
I'm obsessed with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I'm happy that I get these little opportunities to be on podcasts like yours and then be able to like tell everybody else, all my followers, that I was on this podcast. So I'm looking forward to like promoting it.
I already tagged you in a story.
Katie's fucking on it. She is our social media hustler. She is the reason so many people have found our podcast. Our Instagram DM that we have, they're gonna freak. They're gonna like love this episode. So we're just so excited that you were, you know, willing to come spend your mm-hmm. Thursday night like talking to us, and now we get to like share that with our listeners too. So
for sure, yeah, I'm happy to be here, and I'm totally open and excited to come back for any other future episodes you want me on.
Yes, awesome. Ooh, awesome. Maybe I could see a high school focused episode.
Maybe
I want to hear fun or like just resurfacing trauma. So I don't know. We'll see.
It's fine. We've got the cleanup crew here, though, so we're good. We're good. Jeff, if you could leave our listeners with one thing that you think is especially pivotal, either right now or to you, or that you may think is helpful for our demographic, like, would you share that with us? Put you on the spot.
So I don't know if you've seen some of my TikToks. I think like one of the things that I like lean into is telling people or advising people, encouraging people to just fucking ask for their needs to be met. So if you're wanting something in a relationship, whatever fucking relationship it is, but especially like maybe like a partnered or romantic relationship, speak up, ask for your needs to be met so that you can get what you need in your relationship and feel like you can like connect, feel more safe, get what you want. And it's something that like, and it's something that I did with like with my relationship to alcohol, where it sort of I like stumbled upon this need that I didn't even know that I should have been fucking asking for, where like I need to be with somebody who doesn't drink a lot or who doesn't drink that much. And then I got that need met and I was like, cool. Yeah, I'm always fucking asking for this.
Mm-hmm.
So speak up, ask for what you want from all of your relationships, because there's either you're going to like get that need met, which is going to be fantastic, or you're not. And then you have that information. Then you have that data. You don't have to like end the relationship, but you can be like, cool, then I don't have to fucking Jones for it, or I'm going to just like accept it. And it is what it is. So speak up, get your needs met is usually... that's what I want to encourage everyone to do.
I think we all need that. Thank you so much.
Yes, that was amazing. Thank you.
If you want to hear more from Therapy Jeff, you can check him out on Instagram or TikTok at Therapy Jeff. And you can also check out his website, therapyden.com, to search for a therapist in your area.